Andre Owens joins us on Sports Byline. Guard who played in the NBA with Utah and Indiana after playing his college ball at Indiana University and also the University of Houston. And he was a worldwide basketball player playing in Serbia, Spain, Turkey, Russia, the Ukraine, Angola, and I'm sure a few countries I've left out. But he found a home in the Big Three, and he was a first-round pick after having an initial MVP type of season in the Big Three. Andre, it's obvious that you have a love and a passion for basketball. Tell me where that came from.
It just came from my childhood, you know, career and dreams that, you know, I've always been a competitor. And once I was young, you know, my father instilled into me hard work. Always pays off no matter what you do in life. And basketball was my love, and I just gravitated to it.
You know, that was a very interesting house that you grew up in because you had five brothers. Tell me a little bit about that early life for you.
It was rough because, you know, five boys, you know, everybody trying to establish who they are in the house, and it's always competitive. You know, we competed in everything we did, you know. And so we just bowed each other, made each other better. And I'm so thankful for having brothers like that to push me and try to beat up on me until I got a certain age, and it paid off in the long run.
Tell me about that court that your dad built for you to work out in. What was that like?
Oh, it was good. You know, built it in a backyard, you know, to give us something to do instead of always doing crazy things. And once he built that court, We stayed out there all day, all night. You know, sometimes he has to come outside to try to get us in the house 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning. Our neighbors used to complain that we was out there all night, all day long in the summertime.
I love the quote from you. My dad used to have to literally whip my butt at 3 or 4 in the morning on school nights to get me to come inside. When it was snowing, I'd just get the shovel and shovel it off as fast and as best as I could. I lived on that court. What was the competition like with your brothers in basketball?
You know, my oldest brother was always better than me, and I used to hate playing against them every day. It was like they didn't work on their game. I worked on my game every day, and I still couldn't beat them until I got older. And it was just so frustrating. I used to fight them because I felt like they used to use the big brother thing. They used to cheat. They used to push on me. They didn't give me no foul calls. They was always fouling me, and I used to get so frustrated. And I kept playing and kept playing until I finally started to beat them. You know, I used to play 17, 18 games of one-on-one until I finally win. You know, sometimes my dad had to get a broomstick because we was fighting each other so much out there. They were trying to break it up. He had to get the broomstick because I wouldn't leave. I wanted to keep playing until I finally won.
One of the things that I do know is that when you grow up in a large family, and especially a competitive family, no matter what the economics might be, there's something about growing up that makes you a little bit tougher. Was it that way for you and your family?
Exactly. Exactly. Because, you know, we always felt like, you know, to survive, you have to compete. You know, I grew up in a rough area, and the only way we can survive, we have to compete. You know, my oldest brother got to a point where he used to take me to a different neighborhood. It was some apartments, and it was the projects. He used to make me play against older competition just for money. And I used to go over and win.
I know you once said, I used to go out and challenge people to play one-on-one for money so that my brothers and I could eat.
Yeah. Yeah. That's how I was. It was that tough. And I got a lot of stories, but some of them ain't made for radio.
One thing I do know also is that there's something romantic about playing playground basketball, and you were an outstanding high school player. There was no doubt about that. But let me give you a picture and tell me what you remember most about a summer night when it was maybe 90 degrees still out, 95% relative humidity, five guys who are shirts, five guys playing basketball or skins.
Yeah, I remember nights like that. It was this park called John Stewart Park. It was one of our closest friends that was going to Kentucky. He was like number one in the country. He died of an enlarged heart. So they made a park after him. And all the top players in Indianapolis used to go out there and play. And that's how we used to play. Five shirts, five skins. And we used to go out there and play until people left. And it was like dark outside, and they didn't start putting lights up until they started noticing kids were staying out there past curfew. And so they put lights up, and we used to stay out there and play all night long. It was the good old days.
One of the things that I have always thought about is respect when it comes to playing basketball. At that level, playground basketball or even high school level, what is the mark of success? How do you know when your opponents or even your teammates really respect you?
When you can score a bucket when the odds are against you. When you can win the games when the odds are against you. When sometimes they put you on the weakest team, or you're not getting no calls and the odds are against you. Playground basketball, you got to fight to win. You got to fight if the floor is not good that day, the concrete's not good that day, or if it's too hot, the asphalt gets slippery. You know, so you got to fight all the odds against you, and to still come out and win games it feels really good.
Andre, one of the things they always say about playground basketball, and if I'm wrong about this, feel free to correct me, but when it comes to fouling somebody, unless you're bleeding, it's not a foul.
Oh, exactly. If you're not bleeding, it's not a foul. It's not bleeding, it's not a foul. And one thing I learned about playground basketball and translating to high school basketball is the ability to get to the basket. You know, finding ways to create your own shot to get to the basket. You know, going to my eighth grade year, I won the two city championships, eighth grade and seventh grade, and my coach didn't allow us to take it between our legs or shoot threes. So when I translated to high school, I wasn't a great shooter. I had a great high school coach that taught me how to shoot. He said, if we get your ability to shoot the ball with your ability to score baskets, you'll be an NBA player. He was the first one to see in me that I could be an NBA player. You know, I wanted to be an NBA player, but nobody never told me. You know, coming up in my neighborhood, nobody gave you no respect. You got to take it. He was the first one to see it in me, and he taught me every morning at 6 o'clock that, you know, if you shoot 500 shots a day, you'll become a great shooter. And I still do that to this day.
You were an Indiana High School All-Star, recruited by Indiana University and then coach Bob Knight. Tell me about the first time you ever met Bob.
The first time I met Bob is when he came to my school on a visit. You know, we was playing against a guy named Chris Thomas. He went to Notre Dame. He was sitting up at the top of the bleachers with a fisherman hat on. And everybody kept pointing up, and I didn't know who it was. It was this big guy who was trying to be incognito with a fisherman hat on. And I was playing, but I kept looking up because I keep hearing Coach Knight is in the stands. I was a sophomore in high school. And when I seen him, I was like, man, that is Bobby Knight. You know, I was in awe. And that was the first night I met him after the game. You know, I talked to him or whatever. And then I went on a recruiting visit my junior to IU. And Dane Pfeiffer and A.J. Guyton was on the team. And I remember he told them that if y'all don't do this, if y'all don't get y'all job done, this guy's going to come and take your position. Period, point blank. Because he's hard-nosed and he would do anything he takes to win. I guarantee if I tell him to run through a brick wall, he will. Them are the type of players he needs on his team. And yeah. right then I knew that I was going to go to IU.
Yeah, you went to IU, but it didn't turn out to be what you thought it was going to be because Bob got fired, and you said it wasn't the best fit for me because you decided to then go ahead and move on to the University of Houston. There were some games where I'd have 20 points at halftime and wouldn't play the rest of the game. It was confusing. It seemed like there was some funny stuff going on. How hard was the decision to leave IU and go to Houston?
It was tough because, you know, an Indianapolis kid, a hometown hero, coming up playing basketball, we all dreamed to play for IU. And when Coach Knight wasn't there, Mike Davis was our coach, you know, and I played under Mike Davis, but Coach Knight recruited me, and it just didn't feel right. It felt like he didn't have control of the team, you know. We had the number four ranked class in the country, and you know, majority of us was black, and it was like only a couple of us playing at once, you know, a couple of black guys playing at once, and it was just a lot. You know, I was just like, man, this is not a good fit for me because I see myself as an NBA player, you know, and this is not going to get it done. So when I went to the University of Houston, you know, I felt comfortable. You know, Ray McCallum from Indiana, he's always been recruiting when he was at Ball State, and I never showed Ball State any interest because I was a high major type player, and I was getting recruited by high major schools, and I didn't look at Ball State. But he was always worrying about if I was okay, how was my family, how was my life going. He was always worried about how I was as a person instead of a player. And I got comfortable, and that's why I decided to go play for him in Houston.
We've got Andre Owens with us. Andre, of course, started off in Indiana, went to Houston. We're going to talk about his NBA travel and his travels around the world as well, playing basketball, something he loves very, very dearly, and now playing in the Big Three. We continue across the country and around the world. We've got you on America's sports talk show, Sports Byline. Andre Owens has joined us here on Sports Byline. He played in the NBA with Utah and Indiana, playing in the Big Three now, one of their star players in that league. Let's talk a little bit about what you thought the NBA would be like and what it turned out to be once you got into the NBA as an undrafted player.
It was great. You know, it was a dream come true. And I just felt like, you know, I had a freak accident by breaking my tibia bone, gave me a setback, you know, and I think it kind of hurt my NBA careers because I was playing very well before I had an injury. And I was the first one to break my tibia. I broke my tibia. I was the first one. And I think Ginobili broke his, and then Paul George broke his. And it was just like it took me too long to heal. You know, I got surgery. They asked me if I want to put a rod in it or if I don't, because I'm bowlegged. I walk bowlegged. They said if I didn't put the rod in it, it might break again. So I put the rod in my leg, and instead of being out 4 months like they said I was out 9 months, you know. It took me too long to heal. And I kind of, you know, worked hard to get back to the NBA. Once I got back, you know, it took me a year to really finally get healthy, but I was on the NBA team. You see, I got back to the NBA team with the Pacers, but I wasn't 100%. Like, I know I wasn't – I needed a year to heal and – get my explosiveness back. And so after that, you know, I had a chance to go to Milwaukee Bucks partial. But then I got offered a lot of money, you know, a real lot of money to go overseas. And I took the GNT money over the partial. And I made a great career overseas. But, you know, if I had a chance to do it all again, I think I would have took the partial and gambled on myself like I've been doing my whole life. You know, I gamble on myself.
Let me ask you a little bit about the fact that you were an undrafted free agent and the expectations of somebody going into professional basketball under that label as compared to somebody drafted first or second round. How did you approach it mentally and emotionally knowing that you didn't have a first or a second round label on you?
Well, I thought I was going 34 to Utah. You know, that's what they told me. They was going to take me 34 because I had a great Portsmouth, you know, we won it in Portsmouth. I should have got MVP. They gave it to Chuck Hayes. And after that, I was just like, once I didn't get my name called, 34, I thought I was going to go to Toronto because them the two teams that like me, Toronto and Utah. And after that, you know, everything worked out the same because, you know, the second round draft picks, you get the same as undrafted. They brought me in and signed me as an undrafted rookie, but it's always feels good just to get your name called on draft day. And when that didn't happen, I was upset, but I was still blessed to still be a part of the NBA, you know, because I was that Utah class we had with Darren Williams, C.J. Miles, and Robert Whalen, I was the first rookie to start, you know. I was the first rookie to start in Utah. So it felt good to be on a plan for Jerry Sloan because he was the type of coach. It wasn't no politics. The best player that week or two that's having great success in practice plays. And that's one thing I respected about him.
Let me ask you about your worldwide travels playing basketball. I listed off a couple of the countries, Serbia, Spain, Turkey, Russia, Ukraine, Angola. And I'm just wondering, I've had other friends who have played overseas professionally as well, and they tell me that they can make more money from the money thrown on the court by the fans.
Oh yes, they definitely would throw money, you know, especially when I was in Serbia. They treated me like a rock star over there. And if I get fouled, they would throw batteries at the offensive team in chains. it was amazing how that happened. But that's exactly what would happen. Like, if you foul me or you make a dirty play, they would attack you with chains and things of that nature.
Let me tell you that there are other stories my friends have told me as well, but I want to get your stories. Tell me some of the other unique things that happened as you traveled around the world playing basketball.
Well, I remember one time in Red Star and Partizan is like the Celtics versus the Lakers in the early 80s. That's how I was. They was diehard fans. And one time we was playing them in a championship game. We walking through. I can't remember what gym we was, but we was walking through. And Partizan fans was standing outside waiting for us to come through. And they had over 200 police officers outside guarding the gym and everything. And so we walking through, and the fans attacked us. And we start fighting the fans before the game. Before the game, that's how serious these guys was, and it was amazing. I've never experienced nothing like that in my life.
What was playing basketball in Russia like?
Playing basketball in Russia, it was fun. It was a great experience. And let me think. How can I say this? Playing in Russia was very, very fun, but it was just too cold. And the fans over there is great fans, but I don't know. It's hard to explain because it's just so cold over there. But the fans are very good over there. They're very supportive. I played over in Russia with Gerald Green, one of good friends of mine that plays for the Rockets right now, and James Giss. We had a great team. We lost in the semifinals to CSKA. But we had a great team over there.
Well, let me ask you this. You had never been out of the country before you ended up traveling around the world to play basketball. Am I correct in that assumption?
Yes.
Okay, then. What did you find about people universally? What did you find as you got immersed in the cultures of other countries playing basketball?
I believe that I found out that us as Americans, we're spoiled. And I say that as a sense of these people there walk miles to go to work. They sacrifice a lot to take care of their family. And when they call you a friend, they're your friend to the end, no matter what. That's one thing I realized. And I always come home and be thankful for having the family that I have and having the friends I have, because I think sometimes we take life for granted. And when I played in Europe, they don't have as much freedom as we do. You know, we have a lot of freedom, and I feel like sometimes we take that advantage and we don't be thankful for who we are and for what we have.
Andre, we only have a couple minutes left here, but I have to ask you about the Big Three. You were a star last season in the Big Three. A lot of people said MVP type of play, and you've found a kind of a home here. What is it about this league that you really feel comfortable, and why have you been so successful?
I've been so successful because, you know, one, I'm in great shape, and two is that I can play defense and I can score. And one thing about the Big Three, you got to be able to score the basketball, and you got to be able to play defense or you'll get exposed. 5-on-5, you can hide a lot of players that can't score or play defense. 3-on-3, you can't. It's magnified. So everything is watched closely. So if you can't score, or play defense, you would be exposed. And that's one thing is good for me because I can do both.
You know, one of the things that I do know about the Big Three is they've got a lot of big names, guys that have left their mark on basketball in the NBA and in college as well. As you look at them and play against them week after week, what have you come away with? What do you appreciate about those players?
I like it that the camaraderie that we have, no matter if we step between them lines and play and try to take each other necks off, after we all hang together, we all bring up old memories about the NBA or We all go out to eat and just enjoy each other's time. And that's one thing I did miss about the NBA, is the camaraderie.
We only have about 40 seconds left. Tell me about the most memorable moment in your basketball career.
The most memorable moment in my basketball career is playing against Kobe my rookie year. You know, I had like 11 or 10 straight points, and Phil Jackson called a timeout. He yelled at his bench and told him, "Which one are you gonna guard this rookie?" And it was on TNT. That was, you know, the first time playing on TNT, going against the Lakers. You know, looking up to Kobe Bryant, I was like, "Man, I'm here. You know, I'm here. I'm established." That was like one of my most memorable moments.
Well, Andre, I want to thank you very much for your time and sharing your life and your career. I appreciate it. Come back and join me again here on Sports Byline.
Okay. Before I leave, I want everybody to follow me on Instagram. You can see a lot of my stories. My Instagram is AO20Buckets.
Okay, Andre, thanks a lot.
No problem. Thank you.
Andre Owens with us on Sports Byline, played in the NBA with Utah and Indiana after his college ball at Indiana, and then he transferred on to the University of Houston. And, of course, he was a worldwide basketball player playing in Serbia, Spain, Turkey, Russia, the Ukraine, Angola, and I'm sure a couple of other countries as well. But he has found a home in the Big Three, and he was a first-round pick after having an initial MVP type of season. Very interesting hearing his life story. We continue on Sports Byline.